Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Good evening, Razorback fans. We want to welcome you to the one, the only Hog Talk podcast. And we are part of the Believe and Buzz radio networks, where you can hear us on all podcast platforms, as well as Buzz 2, 106.7 in Central Arkansas. So please like, rate, and review our podcast. I'm your host, Porter Hayes, of Sports and Culture Arkansas. Alongside me is Jacob Davis from Arkansas Fight. And all live shows are presented by Arkansas Brewing Company in Ozark, Arkansas, as well as Bet Online, which remains your number one source for all sports betting this season, everything from the NFL, bowl season, and the Super Bowl. Bet Online features your live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable. We're the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite games, leagues, and events. So head on over to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure you use our promo code BLEAV to receive your rewards. Bet Online, where the game starts. And guys, we are joined by Jackson Collier, JC Hoops of Arkansas Rivals, to join us on tonight's show. Jackson, man, appreciate you hopping on with us. And it's been a very interesting week or two for the Razorbacks and what they got ahead. So, yeah, again, thank you for your time.
Yeah, no problem. Really enjoy hopping on here. Really looking forward to the conversation. Always love y'all's stuff. So really just appreciate y'all taking the time to ask me on here. Means a lot, and I always love hopping on, talking ball, everything like that.
Yeah, and I guess what kind of started it was Mason Choate kind of released a statement saying that there needed to be some explanation for a tweet that you had posted during the Baylor game. And I think me and you had even kind of disagreed on the fact, but looking back on it now, not saying you have to defend yourself or beg. There was one guy even wanting you, I mean, three reasons why he should even grace you with a follow back. So I guess the floor could be yours for a minute.
To be fair, he did follow me back, so I got that plus
one. Hey, there we go. He heard you were coming on the show.
So I guess it was one of those things where my timeline after the game was just flooded with everybody complaining about the refs. Arkansas lost because of the refs. Arkansas lost because of the refs. This, that, the other. And, you know, it's the same sort of thing that has happened after other Arkansas losses this season. I was more snarky for my own good than I probably should have been with my tweet, but it's kind of just frustrating to constantly see. Like, there are aspects of the game that you can control. The officials are not one of them. There are opportunities you have within a 40-minute game, 3 hours when they call a lot of fouls, but 40 minutes of game time to win the game without putting it in the officials' hands. That's always been my philosophy, is you don't blame the refs, because you shouldn't allow the game to come down to the point where a ref is responsible. Like a last second call determines the outset of the game. There's 40 minutes before that that you could have changed something that would have had you ahead by more, or something else like that.
Yeah. And one of the things Lance is talking about here was making free throws. Arkansas has been horrible at making free throws. One of the worst in the country. And one of the worst, I mean, probably the worst under Eric Musselman. And we harped on that a couple of weeks ago when we had Aaron Torres on, was making the free throws and making the shots close to the basket. And they've kind of shored that part up, but the free throws continue to nip them in the bud. And, you know, I've seen the second half disparity with the free throws too, where it seems to be close in the first half, it seems to be different in the second half, but Arkansas does foul a lot. Do you think that could probably maybe contribute to the whole factor of, man, we foul so much, that's probably why they're shooting so many more free throws. Arkansas's struggling to foul. What do they need to do to stop that? Maybe play without fouling a little bit more often than what they have been.
I mean, I think they can be less aggressive on defense. I think some guys are playing out of position. Some guys are slow on rotation. Some guys are just being overly aggressive way far away from the ball. And, you know, it's good to be aggressive. It's good to have that physicality on defense because you're trying to set the tone, especially when you're a team that has been struggling. You want to rely on your identity. And Arkansas's identity under Eric Musselman has been physical defense, good defense, contesting shots, forcing turnovers. I think with a young team and with players not acclimated to playing in the SEC, sometimes they either go overboard with the physicality part and the aggressiveness, or they're just not accustomed to the speed of the game and they don't rotate over quite as fast. I think just playing less aggressive and being better within the scheme itself.
I called this, and we had talked about, you know, during the game, we kind of went back and forth about my thoughts on it. And, you know, I've watched and played basketball for 30 years. I know, you know, you can't leave it in the refs' hands, but the refs dictate the flow of any game. That they just, that's just basketball. If you go into a game and you know these two teams are rivals, you're going to call them a little bit chippier. You're going to call them a little bit tighter because you know you don't want to get things out of hand. Where I had the biggest problem was Arkansas had a 33-27 lead at half. You come right out the gate, and the announcers even said, well, they're going to start calling it a little bit tighter because, you know, even at halftime, they have adjustments just like the basketball team does. But you can't, because players are smart, game's smart. If you're letting them play loose in the first half, you can't immediately come out and start calling it tight in the second half. Because then what happens is now you got one guy that had Walsh with two quick fouls in 10 seconds. He gets his fifth foul for waving his hand in the guy's face. And they said on the broadcast that I guess it's almost like a pass interference rule where you can't wave your hand in the offensive player's face. But what happens is not only did Arkansas have the lead, they had the arena on their side in Baylor. Calling the Hogs, they had the atmosphere. And what you did on two separate occasions was Arkansas had like a 5-6 point lead, and then all of a sudden fouls started getting called. Baylor tied it up. Arkansas got a lead. Refs started getting a little bit chippier on the fouls. And I know there was one, I think Makai Mitchell's fifth foul in question. Heads up play, yes, he should have. I mean, let the shot clock run out. But we're competitors. We're all players, and you can't tell me that if both players are going for the ball, Baylor guy kind of jumps in, and if you notice, he throws just a little bit of a tight elbow, bumps into Mitchell, and then Mitchell ends up getting called for the foul. That's where my problem was, and then a big disparity. Everybody was like, points off turnovers. In the second half, the points off turnovers differential was 3 points to 2 points, Baylor with the 1 point edge. But where I will give it is, you can't shoot 25% in the second half like Arkansas did, shot 13 for 30 in the second half. But that's where I was going with the whole ref thing, because in my opinion, how that game changed was how they started dictating on how tight they call the fouls.
I think that definitely played a role, but at the same time, some of those situations that you mentioned, you just got to be smarter in those situations. You're Makai Mitchell. You got to know you're going up against a guard. It's no different than a big man trailing a guard when a guard is bringing the ball up the floor. You know the guard is going to slam on the brakes, make you run into him from behind. Like, you just got to be smart.
More kind of like the football game last night. Awareness,
all that.
So kind of like the Chiefs game last night.
yeah. So I mean, it's just situational awareness. And you know, again, I think some of the calls were good calls. I'm not going to sit here and say that, oh, the officials were fantastic and every single call was good. But I do think some of those calls that you mentioned that do kind of help change the pace of the game, I think they were legitimate calls. I think Arkansas is being too aggressive in some of those points. And then, like you said, if you're not shooting well, it doesn't help you any. One thing I want to point out, too, when people look at the free throw attempt differentials, 24 to 11, and people keep pointing that out, and I understand because it looks bad on the stat sheet, but Six of those attempts were in the final minute because Arkansas was intentionally fouling to extend the game. So the free throw differential isn't plus 13. It wouldn't have been. So you remove those. There's a technical foul that Musselman picked up. That's plus two. So now we're getting into, and then when you take out the three fouls and the intentional fouls, even with those three intentional fouls towards the end of the game to extend the game, Arkansas was only called for like one or two more fouls on the game. So, I mean, if you don't have to extend the game, then Baylor has more foul calls, still more free throw attempts, but not many more.
Yeah.
And I think it's more of a, you know, getting to the hoop and playing through the contact, not trying to draw the foul. Try to finish the shot first. Don't go looking for contact, looking for a foul call. If you're going to drive the paint and you're going to go up for a layup, go up with all your aggressiveness, all your focus on making the shot first instead of trying to seek out contact, because you're not going to get that call.
I see that so much in basketball now, and it's not even on the shot. Anytime you go to drive the ball, I seen that so much last night in the women's game. When they drove to the basket, they're automatically throwing their arm up or their head out and not looking at the basket, and you see so many, and that's why the finishing and the field goal percentage goes down, because they're already looking. And that's where I will give the benefit of the doubt from the ref side, is the players half the time are already looking for a bailout or a foul to begin with. So, but yeah, I mean, you see it all the time. It was every time they would shoot a shot, they would scream or foul like they got fouled. Now it's their flailing, and that's why they had to put a flopping rule in. Because either offensive player or the defensive player was trying to either flop or get a foul called on them.
Yeah, and you also got to think, though, we can't blame the refs when you're also not knowing how to finish games either. Arkansas has had almost a 10-point lead in their last three road losses, and that's what me and Jackson talked about last night, was continuing to blow leads. Like, you've got to learn to play with leads and not be aggressive, but be aggressive. Of trying to keep the foot on the gas, but also not trying to do things on the defensive end that leads you to where you have to play more urgent on the offensive end. Like, playing more, not conservative-wise, but being at least aggressive, trying to continue to win and learn to win. And this team, I mean, they're talented. I mean, they have the talent right now, even without the injuries, without Brazil, without Smith, that they're right there. And I feel like if they figure out how to win one of these road games, they're going to win a lot of road games. They just had to figure out how to win. I don't know if you feel the same way, Jackson or Porter, but I feel like they're very close on the cusp of trying to break through on the road, because we know they're going to win their home games, hopefully, but they've got to figure out ways to win on the road, especially when you have 8 to 10-point leads.
Well, their next two road games, I mean, their next three, I mean, two of the three, yeah. I mean, outside the Kentucky game, you got A&M and South Carolina. So, I mean, they are winnable games on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this team is definitely good enough to put the pieces together. I think they're finding an identity. You know, after the LSU and the Ole Miss games, we were kind of thinking maybe they're finding out what roles they filled, how to play as a team, how to win as a team. Granted, those are home games against two of the bottom feeders in the SEC, but what you do in those games, when you win handily, they won by double digits. What you do is you build some confidence, you build some momentum, and you see a W in the column. And that, as a former player, like, when you see a W, like, everything changes. You're like, okay, now we can do this. So I think they took those back-to-back wins in the SEC, and they're like, okay, well, now we go to Baylor, and we're riding consecutive wins. Why can't we go in their house and beat them? And they almost did. Mm-hmm. I think that moving forward, they're going to play with that confidence. I mean, even though it was a tough loss, this team is still young. I don't think the coaching staff will let the team get down on themselves, even though, you know, they had a lead late, they could have won the game, all this sort of stuff. I think it's more of a, hey, you know, we have X number of freshmen and transfers on this team. We're still gelling. We're missing our top two players that this roster is built around, and we're still competing. You know, why can't we go out and win 7 of these last 10, including a couple road games, and sneak in as a 6 seed? I think it's possible.
You look at the schedule ahead. Of course, tomorrow night's game is going to be another type game like the LSU. At home, school's going to be out, and I think they've already canceled it, so there's going to be a ton of students there. One, how important is it that you get Texas A&M at home with one of those road games, being Texas A&M still yet to play, that you get to play them at home first, get kind of, and it's going to be a quick turnaround, a two-week kind of turnaround, and then you go to at South Carolina in Columbia, so you have a chance to get 500 in SEC play before that game at Kentucky. So how important is those two scenarios that you get Texas A&M at home, at South Carolina to get 500, the potential to be 500 before the Kentucky game?
I think this week is just as big as the last week was with Ole Miss and LSU. You know, if you lose either one of those games, you're pretty much out of the tournament picture at that point in the season and having to have some upset wins, big upset wins, to find yourself back in the field. They got those two wins and they almost beat Baylor to even bolster their resume some more. You really can't. I mean, Texas A&M, it's at home. Texas A&M has been good this year. They're pretty solid in conference play. Their net's not bad. It wouldn't be a quote-unquote bad loss at home, but you really can't afford to lose it because it's a good enough win opportunity to help keep your resume afloat and maybe improve it a little bit. South Carolina, you absolutely cannot lose that game at all. Even on the road, that's still a quad four matchup. Their net is so low. Their team is so bad, just to be frank. They're not good. You really need to win both of these games this week. And I think the coaching staff will nail that into the roster and the team's head. Like, guys, we got to put it together, whatever, blah, blah, blah. I see a comment that there is an SEC tournament. Yes, I do understand, even if they lose, that there's an SEC tournament and all that sort of stuff. You can get the auto bid by winning all of that. Since 1992, Arkansas has only won it once. Nolan Richardson was here for a bit. Mike Anderson never won it. Eric Musselman, better coach than Mike Anderson. Not going to put him on Nolan Richardson's level yet, but they've only won it once. So that, it could happen, but that's still tough sledding.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, you win 20 games. Say they finish 20-11, because even if Nick Smith doesn't come back, I mean, it's all speculative. Nobody knows what's going to happen with that. As we said before the broadcast, you know, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to, you know, forecast if he's going to come back or if he's not. Counting on that, now look to the schedule. If they can finish maybe 20-11 and win a couple of games in the SEC tournament, yeah, that's what you can depend on. I've seen a lot of teams that have made the tournament with 14 or 15 losses out of this conference and still make the tournament. So I don't think there's hope is lost. So I think, you know, you don't have to necessarily win the SEC tournament, but at least give a good showing and not get blown out like you did last year in the semifinal to Texas A&M.
I think 20-11 puts them safely in the field, and depending on who the wins are, that could get them on the 6 or 7 line.
Yeah.
I think 20-11 should be the mark. I think that would put them at 7-3 over the last, or is that 6-5? Yeah.
I think here's another thing. I think it's bigger importance that you get a higher seed. You get above 500 in SEC play because you look at their minutes. You've got Ricky Council at almost 35, Anthony Black at 35, and Devo at 33. All right. If you're banking on the SEC tournament to get a higher seed, that's going to be daunting for them to be playing three games in 3 days with you've got three guys over 30 minutes. So not only getting that seed, but getting in that top four, maybe top five, where you can maybe have a double bye in that SEC tournament, it's going to be huge because now you start to see with the minutes, you're seeing more production. You know, used to, we were seeing Trevin Brazil and Nick Smith Jr., at the leading scores on the team. Now you got Devo at 10, Anthony Black at 12, and Ricky Council at 17. So them having this, how the season plays out, but as we said on last week's show, and what I'll bring up to you is those final three games is going to be brutal. So like you said, that win at South Carolina, I think they need to sweep Texas A&M because you're going to have to get a 2-3 game buffer. Because if you go 0-3 in your final three games and it drops you below 500 in SEC, that's really going to hurt your chances to advance in the SEC tournament, and it's really going to hurt your chances at a seeding going into the NCAA tournament. If they even get it, I mean, because they're on the bubble right now. They're at an 8-9 seed right now. So, I mean, that's very imperative these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, no, I think the final three, it's really a really daunting task. I mean, you go to Alabama, to Tennessee, and have Kentucky at home as your season finale. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, those are winnable games. I don't necessarily want to say, like, rule out any possibility of winning those games. But knowing Eric Musselman, knowing how his teams figure things out towards the end of seasons, knowing they're getting in the groove defensively again after – I don't know what happened for those couple of games where they just started allowing 80-plus points and allowed Vanderbilt to score 97. That was just so uncharacteristic of an Eric Musselman team and of this team, but they're getting back on track defensively. I think, you know, you go to Tennessee and, you know, Musselman has had success against Rick Barnes, you know, kind of a clashing of styles. Like, they both like to slow it down, play really hard-nosed defense, and I think this team can match up decently with that Tennessee team. So I think if you manage to steal that game at Tennessee, that would be huge. I also think having Kentucky both home and away is huge. Last time Kentucky was in Bud Walton, it was one of the greatest single game performances I've ever seen from a Razorback in person. JD Notte, incredible, incredible performance. And obviously Arkansas came away with the win there. I would hope to think that they could do that again this year. Kentucky's kind of wavering a little bit. They haven't been great. They haven't been bad all the time. So they're still trying to figure things out too, but they've kind of come up a little bit. Very difficult stretch. You really need to at least win Kentucky, I would think. And that would put you in a really, really solid spot, especially if you do go on the road and beat A&M.
Yeah. And I think another thing, I mean, with South Carolina coming up, all they have is GG Jackson. So, I mean, if you shut him down a little bit, you got a really good chance. The thing with A&M is ever since they've joined the SEC, they have been a thorn in our side, like, every single game. And, you know, last year, I think, was it they went on the road to start the conference play against State, or was it A&M? I think they started it off last year with State on the road, got and lost by like 13 or 14. They went to A&M and had like a second-half lead. And then let it dwindle down, and they ended up losing that game by like six or seven, and then they come back to Fayetteville and got retribution. Like, that Texas A&M scares me a little bit, but I think they can definitely beat South Carolina. As far as Alabama, I mean, Alabama came back to earth this past Saturday, losing by 24. That was the biggest loss by a top two team in the AP poll history. Like, that's pretty crazy. So can Arkansas, and we've seen it, we've seen the pattern, we've seen how defensively Arkansas is starting to come along, but you also got to take into consideration the teams they faced the first few times, but they kind of looked better against Baylor, to be honest. But can they continue on with the motivation and the momentum to go and beat these teams and kind of get above 500. That's what I want to see, because we've seen it the last 2 years. Sorry to chase rabbits there, but I was having so many thoughts come through. But, you know, Musselman has definitely put his stamp on the program that he's a February coach. A couple weeks ago, like, we talked about him being like 16-2 overall in the month of February. Mm-hmm. So we're banking on that. That's what I'm banking it on. But I don't think they go six. I don't think they go without two losses or three losses in the month of February this year.
Yeah, no, I think definitely they carry on the momentum. I think the way they played at Baylor, that was enough for me. Like, they answered any questions I had. Like, oh, it's just Ole Miss. Oh, it's just LSU. Oh, you went on the road at Baylor and almost won and had the chance to win. Like, I'm not a moral victory guy, but just trajectory-wise and looking forward to, like, what this team can do and how the pieces are fitting, how the rotation's working out, how guys are playing, I think that said a lot about where the team is headed moving forward.
And I really like to see what Devo's done. Devo has really come along the last 10 games and has been that leader that you've been wanting and you've been searching for this whole season. And I think, I know you see it a little bit more often than what we do, but what do you think of Devo's maturation throughout the season and how he's developing into a leader for this team?
Well, I mean, this team was needing a leader, and
absolutely.
Devo stepped up and he said, "This is my team." And, you know, people are kind of following suit. He didn't just do it vocally, although he is doing it vocally. He's doing it with his performance on the floor, in games. And he's also continuing to work, you know, away from mandated practices and all that sort of stuff. He's coming in the gym 2-3 times a day on his own accord, just working on a shot, working on his game. He's still an incredible on-ball defender, and defender in general. He's become a really, really solid offensive weapon, still knocking down outside shots, been money from the free throw line recently. Has really helped on the dribble drive game and slashing too. So I think, and then also, you know, he's the one that kind of gets the feel for the games. He's called a timeout a couple times instead of Musselman calling them. You know, he's the guy that coaches some guys up, says, "Come on, let's go," motivation and all that sort of stuff. I think him stepping into that leadership role has really been a big turning point for the trajectory of the season too, because as good of a team and as talented as a team as it is, even with a great coach, you have to have a team leader, or else you're kind of it's a captain with nobody manning the sails, kind of. You got to take control on the floor. Coach can't get out there and tell guys what to do on defense, within the three-point line, all that sort of stuff. He's still over on the sidelines. So you got to have somebody putting guys in the right spot on the court, motivating them, making plays, and all that sort of stuff.
And you look at the season, you know, we thought this was going to be Nick Smith Jr.'s team, and Anthony Black was going to be kind of his sidekick. So you know how, again, some players come off the bench and play better off the bench than the dude starting. I think the emergence of Devo taking that leadership role has taken so much pressure off Anthony Black, because he was just inserted to be that leader when Nick Smith Jr. Now you're seeing his production come up. Here, I mean, you got to think, the only thing that Devo does bad is the turnover. What was JD Notae known for? Taking bad shots and turning the ball over. So he's almost like stepped into that JD Notae-like player that we've needed, and he's proven that he can score because he was just known as a defender last year. Now he's starting to score. And it's just one of them things that I've talked to Jacob about this before, you know, with the youth on this team. We're talking about this February team, and in January it finally clicks. When you have so many new faces on this team, it's going to take you a little bit longer to click. And look at it. Last week of January, it finally clicked. After a 4-game losing streak, they reel off 2 in a row before the Baylor game. So now that Devo's finally found that leadership role and he stays in it, now I think that's the biggest key when we look back, is Devo stepping up and being a leader is going to mean way more than people even realize it, because it's going to make other people around him better.
Absolutely, 100% agree with all of that.
But I guess the thing is, too, we wrap up. We were talking about, you know, say they get into this NCAA tournament, and when another thing that you had mentioned on Twitter was like a possible 7-10 seed. You want to get out of the 8-9 line because, of course, you win, you got to play the number one seed. But a point I was thinking about was, you know, Arkansas gets a 7 seed, and you always think of a 7-10 matchup, you're always, maybe most of the time, you're playing some hot mid-major team that shoots a lot of three-pointers. If you really don't have that three-point threat on Arkansas that you can count on, is that more of a dangerous that you'd want to be a 10 seed playing that, maybe a Purdue or somebody middle of the pack, even like a Clemson out of the ACC, middle of the pack team that's not really relying on three-point shooting? Because we know come tournament time, some of these mid-major teams get hot from the three-point line, and you could turn a 4 or 5 point game into a 12 to 13 point game in a couple of trips down the floor.
Yeah, so I'm kind of just going to say the same thing I said before we started airing. I think, you know, you always want to improve your seeding in the NCAA tournament, because typically the better seed, the better the matchup. And, you know, that 7-10 matchup, it's tricky. I mean, the 8-9, it's pretty much – it's not an upset. And I wouldn't really consider 7-10 much of an upset most years anyway. But I was doing some digging and looking back a few years after I saw your comment. And it's looking like every year or most years there's one matchup in that 7-10 slotting that it's like a high major program against a high major program. And then the other three, it's typically high major versus mid-major or so. And a lot of those mid-majors do have some really, really streaky or even really, really good shooters. But also looking at that, it looks like more often than not, the seventh seeds do get the win. So I don't think there's any necessarily data to show that either one is better than the other. I think it's all just tournament luck of the draw kind of matchup stuff. I still would probably advocate for having a better seed and getting that 7 spot instead of the 10 spot, but obviously you want to push for the 6, but that's just me. I don't think either answer is wrong though.
Jake, you got anything else before we wrap up?
Well, I was going to tell him. Now I see you got the Bowen School of Law hoodie or sweatshirt on there. How is it being a Bowen student? Along going with your work with Arkansas Rivals?
Man, law school has been really difficult. I really enjoyed my time at Bowen. I really enjoyed most of my professors, all my professors, and making all the friendships I had. You know, law school isn't easy. I don't know if y'all would know that.
School wasn't easy for me anyway, so I couldn't imagine going to law school.
You know, it's one of those things I joke about. You know, a lot of times I kind of regret doing it, but now that I'm at the finish line, graduating in May, like it's about to be done, so I can't really regret it too much. Right. But you know, I love it, and doing Arkansas sports with Rivals while doing it, it's been a lot, but it's also helped maintain some of my sanity because I can work on stuff that I really enjoy covering and not just strictly be reading case law and studying my brains out. That would drive me insane if that was all I did. So it really does kind of keep me grounded a little bit.
You know, debating in the courtroom is just like debating with hog fans. I mean, it's just giving you that you know, getting you practice for being in the courtroom, you know, all these fans all over you, making you put out an Arkansas Rivals press release saying, you know, you apologized, and then
that was not a foul. So, yes, it was.
Being in the courtroom. Your Honor, this is cut and dry case of this being a foul and the refs were not bad.
Exactly. Well, Jackson, hey, man.
The Arkansas fan comes up, F you, you're wrong.
Yeah, there you go. Bailiff, take him away. Oh, goodness,
Jackson,
man.
Glad you came on tonight, sir. Brother. It was a pleasure having you, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate y'all asking me on anytime. Let me know, and we'll do this again sometime.
Yes, sir. Well, after the break, we're going to continue the conversation, talk about the basketball team. What the rest of the season looks forward to, especially with the back-to-back, you know, you're playing Kentucky at home, and then you end the season here at Bud Walton Arena. So we'll talk to you after the break.
Shelby Taylor Trucking serves all your timberland needs in South Central Arkansas. With over 50 years in the industry, Shelby Taylor Trucking has established themselves as trustworthy leaders in the industry. From planting to harvesting to hauling your timber, Shelby Taylor Trucking is ready to serve you. Follow them on all social media platforms at Shelby Taylor Trucking. Learn more by visiting their website at staylortrucking.com. That's staylortrucking.com.
McCoy Tiger Drug Store of Sheridan, Arkansas has been the top pharmacy in all of South Central Arkansas since 1895. They were also the 2020 Good Neighbor Pharmacy of the Year. They not only fix you up with your prescription with timely and friendly service, but also an elite gift shop. All your OTC needs, baby and wedding registries, tuxedo rentals, and much more. They're located at 821 North Rock Street in Sheridan. Give them a call today at 870-942-5121.
And we want to welcome you back to the Hog Talk podcast. And again, thank you so much for Jackson for coming on. It was a fun. Glad he's a good sport, you know, because that's the main thing. And I told him before we started recording this, you know, I wanted to show people, you know, me and him went back and forth on comments and stuff and never got heated, never got jabby, you know, and there's so much times where, you know, people have a difference of opinion or that was a foul. And then everybody wants to get personal and stuff. And me and another guy was even going just back and forth on what we thought about the game. And it's like when people realize you can be civil and have a conversation and you have your right to think that the refs weren't at fault. I have my right to think that the refs were at fault and we both say why. And one, it was kind of cool that I got to debate with a lawyer and felt like I come out on the, on the winning edge. Cause he kind of, you know, not backtracked, but was like, hey, I can see now that how this would come off. But no, it's really good to be able to have those kind of conversations because that's what I want. Have conversations, whether we agree or disagree, and just because it makes for good showmanship. It makes for good content, the fact that you don't have two people trying to be right instead of just having a back-and-forth conversation.
Yeah. He made some great points. But, yeah, even on my Twitter, I had people like, your takes are garbage. I'm like, bro, man, look. Do you not have any more anything else like concrete, like an argument that you can come to me and be like, why do you not think that my thoughts are not as good as yours? Like, tell me why. And like, I type out like a 3-paragraph reply. And I'm like, I'm wasting my time because it's 3 days after the game and he still hadn't even tweeted back at me. And you know, like it is great to see like guys be a good sport. Guys, like, not take themselves too seriously either, because it's like Jackson's a law student, and he's also a basketball guru, genius, you know, kind of like what he's the equal of Kevin Bohannon in baseball. Jackson's a great guy, and I appreciate him coming on and at least kind of backpedaling a little bit. After rewatching the game, I thought there was some egregious calls against Arkansas. A lot of things that weren't called. A lot of the one thing, like there's a couple of things that really irritated me, Porter. It was the blatant tackle that was right in front of the referee on Anthony Black.
Yeah.
When it was 38-37, Baylor, Arkansas was trying to take the lead. And the dude, like, I rewatched it so many times. And I don't know if it was just the angle that I watched it or, and you know, the referee that was down on the baseline watching the play out, like it just didn't make any sense. Like, how does a guy that looked like he was barely moving after he missed the shot, how does he turn around and so quick, like spear Anthony Black to the ground? Like, it just didn't make sense. And I rewound it and rewound it and rewound it. And I'm like, how do they let this happen? And whether it was accidental or not, it was a bonehead play by the Baylor player. And it should have been called. And then there's the over-the-back penalty. That's the second point I want to make, and I'm going to flip it back to you, is the over-the-back penalty or foul, like, is not being called on a regular basis like it should be. Like, the offensive players can go and sky in for offensive rebounds with reckless abandon for their bodies and the players, the defenders around them, and they can go and do whatever they want to at the rim trying to pull in a rebound. But the moment you even touch an offensive player on their end, it's a foul. Well, and that's where it kind of frustrates me. And I mean, even if it's the offensive player initiating the contact, I don't care if it's the Arkansas or not, that is not a foul.
According to Coach Neighbors, there is no such thing as over the back. That's true. That's not saying there's just no such thing as an over the back call. It's either an offensive foul or a defensive foul. Yeah. But the thing you got to remember is the same thing in football. The running back can sit there and punch the dude in the face.
Yeah.
Or not anything but grab his. He can stiff arm and put his hand on the guy's face mask and almost grab it. and it's hardly ever called. But if you even touch the dude's face mask on the defensive side,
yeah,
it's a call. I want you to, the next time you watch a game, I want you to watch when they dribble, and we're talking about wanting to get bailed out. There is more so of, instead of dribbling and having your shoulder out and your arm in, look how many elbows are out. Look how many, they're dribbling like this, wanting a foul. Or when they go up for a layup, they're like this with their elbow and get the contact. And that's like so many of these posterized dunks. They're going up like this and then knocking the guy out of the way. Or if they cross them over, they're pushing off. It's just, this is such an offensive-minded game.
Yes, it's geared to the offensive player.
And it's geared toward the excitement and the entertainment of the offense that you can't play. I mean, like, and they've tightened up a little bit on, if you're actually straight up, they don't call it as much, but it's just gotten out of hand.
Yeah. Like, there's too much of it. Even when, like, I was watching the girls game last night, and there was plenty of times, whether it was Jersey or whether it was Sailor, like, the girls are, you know, they're standing there with their hands up, like, they're not initiating contact, but the offensive player is pretty much just leaping into them, and it's a foul. Like, that is not fouls. Like, I don't, like, it's like we're anticipating things. And that's another thing, like, there was a game I was watching last night, and the offensive player was driving to the basket, and just like you said, he was elbowing, had the ball in here tucked in, elbow off the glass, got called for and one, and I'm like, that's not a foul. But we're seeing that, and that's what led me to say, like, the officiating in all of college basketball, that's what I said on Twitter last night, the officiating in all in college basketball is horrendous. It's terrible. It's everywhere. Everybody it's terrible. But they're also not favoring anybody. I mean, if they're favoring anybody, it's usually the home team. Usually the home team gets the calls. But it's not I don't remember how I actually phrased it last night, but they're not picking on your team.
Here's the thing with the refs. And I think we can, Sheila Baber just said exactly what I was going to say. All right.
Yeah.
The frustration is they can call a crap game.
Yeah.
And all they get is a PR statement at the next day. Oh, my bad. My bad. We got it wrong. But there's no accountability. And you are making, I looked up the salaries. I mean, you're making killer money. I mean, you're making $70,000-$80,000 a year to be a ref in the SEC. The top refs. Some of them are making close to $200,000. Okay, you're making a lot of money. You got three of them, and you've got the technology of replay to go help if you do. We're not saying everybody's perfect, but the simple fact, and this is the why everybody is so frustrated, they don't have to answer for anything. The head coach has to answer for, you know, blowing a lead. The football player, like on the Bengals, God, you know, I mean, bless his heart, having to answer for why he touched Mahomes after the play. I understand it was a horrible thing, that outcome of the game, but to sit there and know that the dude has cost his team a chance to go to the Super Bowl, you don't think he doesn't feel bad enough as it is, and you're going to sit there and berate him? Well, and then B, I can't believe you done that. I mean, put your self, the dude, grown man, was in tears knowing that he cost his brothers, his teammates, a chance. But the fact is, they don't have to answer for nothing.
Yeah. And it was, and the thing is, like, and these players and the coaches, they can't say anything about the officiating or they're going to get a fine.
Exactly.
And it's freaking ridiculous, man. You can't say anything or you're going to get fined $25,000, $50,000, or $100,000 for saying it. I mean, Lane Kiffin, bless his heart, man. He's on Twitter all the time, being passive aggressive towards the officiating, and you know, and he gets. I mean, you know, it's not saying exactly what he wants to say, but he still gets fined for it because everybody knows what he's insinuating.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first thing he said after the game. I'm not going to say nothing. I mean, it's just they can't say anything.
Yeah, you can't. So, and I think it's ludicrous that you can't do that.
I think you're a paid official. You're paid to do that job. If you don't do your job, you should have to, you know, you should have to answer for, or not even answer. All right, if you don't even, let's just, at least there should be some punishment other than a PR stunt. Oh, we're going to review it. And no, you're not. There's no, I can't remember the last time a ref has been suspended or fined. Take his pay. You know, take his game check away. And I guarantee you, if you start holding them accountable and punishing them, taking a little bit of their money away, I guarantee you they'll start taking their job serious. Because they could go into an arena and they make it about them and they start calling fouls and getting lippy with the refs because they can sit there and get lippy with the coaches or fans or players, and then they get to get escorted out into their locker room and then ride out to the sunset, they get to ride off.
Yeah. This isn't high school. Like refereeing in high school is different. And I know that it's hard because they get berated by fans and stuff too. And you get paid next to little money to officiate these, but you are dictating like outcomes of seasons. Like I know Arkansas blew their 10-point lead. They blew a 10-point lead against Missouri. They blew another lead a couple of weeks ago in another road game. But it's not – I mean, Arkansas needs to learn to play with a lead and fight off the adversity that they're having to fight off, whether it's fouls and stuff, and you're going to have to learn to be less aggressive, like Jackson said. And you've got to learn and adapt to what the flow of the game is. And until they learn that, I don't know if they're going to be able to win a road game. Well, I don't.
And you can't – but here's the deal, though. You can't say – play aggressive, adapt.
Yeah.
But yet, if the refs come out in the second half and totally call a completely different game.
Yeah.
I mean, by the time you adapt, you got Jordan Walsh with four fouls.
And Jordan Walsh, like 50% of the fouls that he's been called for this season have just been absolutely abominable. Like it's an abomination.
I still want to know why he got that fifth foul called on him. And he wasn't doing anything. They said he was face guarding. And that was
what are you supposed to do? You can face guard. Like
that's what they said on that. I mean, that's like, what I'm saying. That's what they said. What are you supposed on the to broadcast. Do? I don't
like,
know.
When you're in the driving lane and you're trying to defend a shot, you're going to go after the ball and try to shield the guy away from being able to find the basket, find the backboard, so he can lay it off of there. When you're trying to deflect balls out of the passing lane, your hands are everywhere trying to disrupt the passing lane. I don't care if he's covering the guy's eyes up. When you're defending a three-point shot, your hands are in the face of the offensive player. Like, and then there's some crap that's called on Jordan Walsh, like a guy coming from behind him going up for a basket, and all Jordan's there trying to do is get the freaking rebound. And the official calls a foul on Jordan because he's away in the way of the offensive player when Jordan Walsh's back is toward the offensive player. That is not a foul. And the guy is getting no favorable calls. And you have like Mekhi Mitchell yesterday. Like these guys, like our post players are getting so many fouls called on them. And you know, you're limited on depth and you're already shorthanded, you know. So it just stinks that you're having to see this game after game after game. And I know what Sheila's saying here, our AD will hopefully demand accountability. He's in with the big two sports, because usually there's not much umpiring, you know, in the baseball you have to worry about. It's the big two because they have the instant replay. They can see things in slow motion that you don't get to see during the speed of the game. But, like, Hunter Yurcheck was basically told to shut up by the SEC office. He was basically told to shut up. We don't care about what's going on. And that's basically what he's saying. It doesn't matter how many times he comes up there to him. The SEC's just like, just shut up.
So
just go sit down. You know where your place is. Just enjoy being the athletic director of an SEC school.
Well, and here's the deal. And I'm, you know, Tyler Cast made a tweet the other night. Arkansas was called for five fouls between 15:30 mark and 14:38 mark, 52 seconds of the second half. Baylor was called for five fouls at 20 minutes till 38 seconds left in the second half. All right, so I'm going back and I'm looking shot by shot, and we're talking about the refs not being held accountable and changing and adapting. Arkansas was up 40-35 with 16:12 left in the game. At the 14:38 mark of the game where they called those fouls, it was a 40-39 game because Baylor scored a two and then they got two free throws.
Yeah.
All right. 6:08 left in the game. Arkansas is up 53-49 after a Walsh jumper. The next 8 scores. Baylor. 4 of them were free throws. You're up 53-49. Cryer got a jumper. Then you had free throw, Thamba by Flagler, and then Thamba free throw, free throw. So back-to-back fouls. So you can't tell me that in two instances you're up 5 points, and then all of a sudden where's these fouls coming from? How do you adapt to that? How do you adapt to the point where, and like I said, it goes beyond just the fouls and adapting. You were up 35-27, had the arena. You had them calling the Hogs after every turnover. And you only had a 13-8 point differential all the whole game on turnovers, points off turnovers, and it was 3-2. But
yeah,
it was just one of them things. It was very frustrating to see a game where they needed that momentum, a 3-game winning streak, because they know what's ahead of them. But again, 24-hour rule. They've got a game tomorrow night, Texas A&M. It's going to be another atmosphere just like the LSU. Kids are going to be there. They're going to be giving away tickets, and that place is going to be 19-2. And I think that's going to be very impactful for when they go to South Carolina on Saturday. It'll be a 2:30 game on SEC Network. Tomorrow night's game will be on ESPN2, by the way, at 6.
I think we'll see a pretty good house of fans. And speaking of House of Fans, you were talking about the Baylor atmosphere. Baylor should be embarrassed for having Arkansas show up for 38 minutes of that game and just control the atmosphere. They should be embarrassed. Baylor won a national championship 2 years ago. And they have a 10,000 capacity seat building. They're building another one that's like, I don't know, like 75 or 8,000 fans, or you know,
10-6 was the attendance.
What's that?
10-6 was the attendance. 10,006, and that's the thing. That's ridiculous. Like,
they should be embarrassed. Like you're not selling out every single seat in that stadium or that gymnasium. You just come off a beating of the national champions at their place. You've won 5 in a row. You're playing a team that just come off an Elite Eight back-to-back seasons in Arkansas, and you can't even pack your own gym with a 3 o'clock start. And Arkansas is up there like their fans, you know, traveling so well. And Jalen Graham even said it after the game. He says, "I've never played for a school that fans traveled so well." Like that speaks to the pride that this program has for their team.
Well, and you won a national championship. You won a national championship 2 years ago. That's the thing. I mean, you're coming and you're not there and your coach has been there 20 years. I cannot believe. I didn't even realize he'd been there 20 years. He's in his 20th year.
Yeah.
You got a coach.
He's been there.
Could you imagine Eric Musselman? Say Arkansas is playing in Barnhill. Coach Musselman's been in Arkansas for 20 years, won a national championship, had all these Elite Eight runs and stuff, and they have yet to build you another arena. I mean, that would be insane. But
yeah,
you're down there in Waco. They want. I think they're one of their programs that hold on to their football program, and that's what they're going to stick with. They don't want to give up their lie or their, what do you call, their badge of honor of being a football school. But, you know, you're winning national championships in basketball. I don't know.
I don't even know if you can consider them being a football school. I know football has been successful. No. But, I mean, you had the Art Briles years. You had the Matt Rhule a couple of years when he was winning 10 or 11 games. And now you're back there with Aranda, who won the Big 12 last year, and then you go 6-6 this past season. Like, I don't really think Baylor. I think Baylor should have more pride in their basketball team. They're the ones that won them a national championships. More recent than their football has. I mean, I don't even know if the football team's won a national championship.
You could argue they were a women's basketball program before Kim Mulkey went to LSU.
They were power when Mulkey was there.
And you see what Mulkey's doing at LSU. She's turned that thing into a juggernaut. I mean, that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the thing is that what we uncovered in stuff with Devo's emergence, I think the more we talk about it, the more importance we've realized on how much he means to this team. And he's going to be the key until if Nick Smith Jr. comes back. You know, I know that, you know, as further we go in the season, it's going to be brought up until we figure out what's going to go on with that. But I think that's why we talked about that a few weeks ago when we mentioned, is the talk of Nick Smith Jr. going to cause a distraction? They needed somebody to step up. Somebody stepped up. You're not going to win every game just because you have a leader. But now we're rolling into February. And you got a favorable schedule at the beginning. Yeah. I mean, yes, you go at South Carolina, at Kentucky, Mississippi State, Texas A&M, Florida, and then you got Georgia, February 21st. So then you got the final, February 25th at Alabama, 28th at Tennessee, which that's going to be daunting. And then I think the thing is, though, you get that last game at Kentucky at home. That's going to be a madhouse. 1 p.m. on a Saturday. It's on CBS. Yep. I'm telling you, they win that game, that's going to boost their momentum. But they still have a chance. Right. There's still a lot of SEC play left. They're not a panic mode. It's just I think with Devo stepping up, it's allowed Black scoring to come up. Ricky Council is able to do what he wants to do. So I'll take Devo's turnovers if it means him being a leader and it causes the step up.
That's what I was actually going to bring up, was I liked what you said earlier about Devo. And you know, we talked about Note. Arkansas was going to go as far as how far Note would take them. And I would live with Note taking 20-something shots a game because we knew he was going to make, 40% of them. He was going to jack up threes. And it's kind of like with Devo now. He's not going to take stupid shots. He's not taking bad shots. But he's making shots almost at a 40% clip. And that's one thing. After the LSU win, I took Devo's body of work from the last 8 games. The guy was averaging like 14 points a game. He was having so many other rebounds. His field goal percentage was up there. Like, things that people weren't saying about Devo. Yeah, he's been great. But I think when we posted that on Twitter and Facebook and showed proof in the pudding that Devo is emerging as the leader, the heart of this team. I think people kind of took it as like, and maybe Devo is the guy. And I will take turnovers, like 2 or 3 stupid turnovers from Devo, because it's not like football where you live and die by a play, and one play is going to kill your game or kill your ability to win that game. Like, you can deal with 2 or 3 turnovers that are just dumb passes and stuff by Devo if he's going to continue to give you the production that he's given, because he's doing a lot more stuff positive right now than he's doing negative.
And I'll tell you what, you take 2 points away from his game and you give it to one to Ricky Council, right? Or even if Devontae Davis was averaging like Jordan Walsh numbers, 7.2. But if he's that leader, and now Jordan Walsh bumps up to 10 points a game. You don't need your leader to necessarily score you 25 points. If he corrals you, he's calling the timeouts. He realizes he stepped out of his shell, and he's like, hey, this is my team, as in I'm the leader of this team. And and your teammates believe in you to be their leader, and they don't expect, well, I'm the guy, I'm going to shoot it 20 times a game. You know, I mean – it's the fact that he shot it 199 times. So he shot it a lot. But you look at Anthony Black's 192. Ricky Council shot the ball 273 times.
That's a lot of shots.
That's a lot of shots.
But that's JD Note level.
But he's shooting a 46%. And that's the thing. But when you're playing 34 minutes, and 32, you're going to put up a lot of shots. I mean, and he's only got, let's see, I mean, he's only got 40 turnovers this year. So he's actually, and we talk about Devo Davis and his turnovers, he's still got 10 less than Council, and 24 less than Anthony Black. So we got to cut him some slack when it comes to, yes, he's got 40 turnovers for the year.
And he's playing just as many minutes as those guys, too.
So cut him some slack. He's your leader, and he's done a pretty damn good job of being a leader. Since he's kind of stepped up and take that role, they're 2-1. A heartbreaker loss to Baylor. But now it's time to really, kick it in gear, win these next couple of games, win the games that you're supposed to, get that road win against Texas A&M, get that momentum before the game at Kentucky. That's a winnable game because Arkansas and Kentucky, that's all, Sheway is not Sheway from last year. So it just depends on who wants it more when it comes to that.
I think Arkansas and Kentucky match up well. They were considered the 1 and 2 teams coming into the season, and this year it's kind of been surprising. We haven't seen exactly the two teams we thought we were going to see. But man, I expect it to be a big game atmosphere in Rupp. I figured their fans will show up for that game because it's a big game. I think it's something that will indicate or dictate where these two teams will probably be seated in the NCAA tournament because. We know that the NCAA, when in their selection committee, they base it off what you do in your final 10 games, not what you've done before, but and maybe just the quad one wins. But they take a lot of consideration of what Arkansas will do in their final 10 games. And the final 10 games start tomorrow. Let's see how they do.
Yeah, and they're sitting. Let me look at the. I had it pulled up right quick. I think they're sitting at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10th place. So they're at 10th right now. But as we talked about, you win 2 or 3 of these games, that's going to put you at 5-5. All right, 5-5 right now.
Yeah.
You're right there with Kentucky and Florida, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 6 seed. So you move up, you can move up 4 or 5 spots before the Kentucky game. So that's going to be imperative when it comes to, especially the South Carolina game. You cannot lose because they're 1-7. You cannot lose that. Also, talking about A&M, they're 7-1 right now. You sweep that. That puts them at 7-3 or 3 losses on top of whatever. Then you bump over them because you'll have the tiebreaker. Then you're going to play Florida.
Yeah.
That's going to be big. So you win the games that you're supposed to, you're going to be sitting pretty at about a 5-6 seed when it comes to tournament time.
Yeah, the South Carolina game really doesn't matter as far as where they're going to be at the NCAA tournament time because they're just going to have to win this game anyway. I'm looking at the net ranking right now, and I can't find South Carolina anywhere near the top 200. So they're nowhere near the top 200.
Well, that game, look, I'm just talking about you need to win that game because of SEC seeding.
I'm trying to find. Yeah, A&M's 44, so that would be a quad one win. If you beat A&M, that's quad one. It's so hard because there's like 360 teams in
Division One basketball could very well change between now and then because those net rankings change. And daily. Well, I don't think they're going to fall that far, but still yet.
Yeah, Kentucky's 36.
You got to win the games that you're supposed to win.
Absolutely.
And they're peaking later than what we thought. But, I mean, look, we're not going to do morals, but to what they've done losing their top two players or one of their top player and then another one in Brazil who was a surprise. Like, I keep comparing him to Justin Smith, but it's just the fact that you lose two of your guys like that, and now it's kind of you go on a losing streak. You could have packed it up. All right, guys, let's we got all this youth. Let's just get ready for next year. You haven't done that. So.
Yeah.
But, Jacob, you got anything more before we roll out?
I was looking at net rankings. Okay. They got Mississippi State at 54. So there's definitely at least 4 or 5 games that Arkansas can win going forward that are realistic victories that you can win and they be quad one wins. So yeah, I mean outside the South Carolina game, you've got plenty of games you can win that are quad one and quad two, and I think Arkansas set up right now. I think Arkansas fans can be proud of where they're at after starting 1-5 in conference play, and you start off and win that game against Texas A&M tomorrow night and. And you can start thinking Arkansas is going to make their run. This is the annual Musselman run, but they got to win tomorrow, fans. And I think they can do it tomorrow. And so Razorback students, Arkansas students, big Razorback fans, pack the house tomorrow. I don't care if you have to walk down Icy Hills.
Take your sleds and even get you a piece of cardboard.
Somehow, get the Bud Walton and pack out the bottom level at least. So, if you haven't already, subscribe to our podcast if you enjoy our content. You can find us on all podcast platforms, and you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and anywhere else if you want to watch us live every week. Just give us a like and a review, and maybe even give us a 5-star rating if you really actually like us.
Yeah, and always we're brought to you by Bet Online and part of the Buzz Radio Network. And this time next week, we're going to be going live on Saturday. I'm going to be doing the polar plunge for the Special Olympics of Arkansas. I've looked at the temperatures and light a candle for me at Catholic Mass for me. Say a prayer. I think the high is going to be 43. So it's going to be a cold plunge, but you know what? It's for a great cause. You see the banner behind me of the Special Olympics of Arkansas. So if you haven't yet, we got the link up. If you want to pledge, I mean, anything for, you know, trying. My goal is 500. I think we're at 225, 250, halfway there. We're going to donate 100 to that cause. So, you know, we're going to put that up there and try to reach our goal. But we will be filming live from Creekmore Park on Saturday. It starts at 11 o'clock. So I'm going to have to stand outside for the next couple of days in this cold weather to get used to it. But also tomorrow night, special guest tomorrow night, I will announce it in the morning. Yeah, a little teaser from the Arkansas gymnastics team. Team of the week, in my opinion, to upset LSU and to have a record crowd in Barn Hill is over 7,400 people, which we'll break down that and as well as everything else going on in the world of women's sports at Arkansas. But for Jacob Davis, I am Porter Hayes. That will do it for this episode of the Hog Talk podcast, and we will catch you tomorrow night on a new broadcast.
Go Hogs!
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.